With the first pick in the 2007 NFL Draft, the Oakland Raiders select quarterback Jamarcus Russell, LSU.
And here we go.
Back to the NFP, Matt Cohen along with Wes Budding. We've been on break for a little while from our podcasting duties. We're going to hit this hard moving through the playoffs and into the NFL draft throughout the Senior Bowl, the East-West game, and the NFL Combine as we start making our way towards creating our draft boards and getting ready for the April draft. But Wes, we got to start with Tim Tebow and the Broncos. We got to. It's the talk of the NFL right now. It's almost as if the three other playoff games didn't even happen. Because you have Tim Tebow, and here's how it is, Wes. All week, all we heard was, hey, Brady Quinn's getting snaps in practice. Brady Quinn's going to come in on passing situations. This is the end for Tebow. He's going against the number one defense in the NFL. And now Denver's had to look to the offseason at the quarterback position. I'll tell you what, man, you go out and throw three for 316 yards, put up 50 yards on the ground, three total touchdowns against the number one defense in the NFL. You're starting quarterback now. You're starting quarterback for 2012, maybe beyond, because they're always going to look at this game and say, I know Tebow's got deficiencies. He doesn't have the proper mechanics. Sometimes it looks, you know, kind of nasty, but the guy produced.
Yeah, without a doubt, Bone. I think the biggest thing when you look at this is, who is this guy throwing to? Got to give props to Demaryius Thomas. But Daniel Fells, you have Dante Rosario, Jeremiah Johnson, Willis, the wide receiver. I mean, he doesn't have a great group of receivers to throw to. And, you know, he picks his spots. I thought he did a nice job throwing the football vertically down the field and extending plays. I believe that Fells play where he threw it down the middle seam, you know, that was a play he kept alive inside the pocket. And plus, when he gives you that threat to run the football and you have to key up, there's no extra men in the deep half, you know, the throwing lanes that he's looking at aren't the same as what Aaron Rodgers is throwing at. If that's Aaron Rodgers at the end of the game, there's no way the Steelers are in that defense. But because teams have to respect that run so much, it gives him the opportunity to throw into bigger passing windows, which you're going to get throughout his entire career, and really puts a lot of stress on defensive coordinators to game plan for him.
Yeah, and that's a great place to start because there was a lot of questions. I had to go back and watch the final play multiple times, talk to some people in the football business who know X's and O's about that set that Pittsburgh was in. And they ran it a lot during the game. It does look like cover zero. Well, cover zero is blitz man, no safety help. You put it inside leverage, take away inside breaking concepts like the post, the slant, the dig. The ball gets thrown to the outside hand. It's on the scheme. But in this situation, when it happened live, I'm watching Ike Taylor. And Ike had a rough day, let's be honest.
Yeah.
He had a rough day in coverage. He struggled versus the nine route, which is the fade route. Struggled versus the double move. Was pretty sloppy with his technique. I turned around a couple of times like the top. But going back to that play, Wes, what it is cover two. All right? And then for the listeners out there, cover two is too deep. Too deep, 500. But it's inverted cover two. And a lot of teams will run this when they want to put their safeties in run support. Instead of having the corners in the flat, both the safeties from yesterday, Bundy and Polamalu, will be flat players. They're edge players. They're contained players in the run. They can crash off the edge versus the inside zone versus the read option, take the running back on the pitch. A lot they can do down there. But what that does in that situation, it puts Ike in the deep half. And underneath that technique for the safeties, I call it thumbs. All right, we played it in Washington with Greg Williams in our cover seven, which is combination man. You'd have a deep half corner over the top, and the safety underneath would play almost like a trail man, almost like a two-man situation, and try to undercut a slant, undercut a dig, work underneath the out route, work underneath the hitch, try to cushion the corner on the seven route. But what did Denver do, Wes? They used play action. It froze the safeties a little bit. Now you got Ike playing a deep half, position he's not usually in, let's be honest. It's a much different technique. And as a deep half player, whether you're a corner or a safety, you have to stay on top of number one. You have to stay on top of them. Take away the deep post, take away the seven, take away the nine. If they want to run a slant, a dig. You know what? You come up, make the tackle, go back to the huddle. Not only did Demaryius Thomas beat him to the inside, he also stiff-armed. I mean, it was just a bad play altogether for Pittsburgh. I know Dick LeBeau would want to go back and try to change that, but they've been running it the whole game. It's first down and overtime. I mean, I expected either the zone read, an inside trap, or the power roll. That's all I expected from Denver.
Yeah, and I love the guts of Denver there.
Yeah. Colin.
I mean, for the first time saying, you know, because that whole game, it was so predictable that they were going to run on first down, try to stay ahead of the chains, and keep Debo in manageable passing situations. And the whole time you're waiting, will you let this guy throw on first down? Because as quarterbacks, you watch Peyton Manning, you watch Eli Manning, you watch Tom Brady. These guys take their shots on first down, working off play action, trying to get the defense to suck up and then look over the top. And especially with that option read where Tebow's able to fake the option, pull the ball out, which is their play action read, and zip it down the field. The throwing lanes are so big. I love the guts for calling it early on.
Yeah, you and I were talking before we started taping. Mike McCoy, the offensive coordinator for Denver, he just got himself a head coaching job problem. I mean, maybe he's not going to get one, but he's going to get a lot of interviews because he put together a solid game plan. I mean, we talked about the nine route already. They also had boot action.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of boots. The read option absolutely froze James Harrison a couple of times. All right? He didn't know how to attack that. You know, inside breaking concept. You know, Tebow struggles throwing the comeback. I mean, he struggles throwing the deep out. Let's be honest. When you have a quarterback who has limited ability when it comes to accuracy, that's a play you don't want to call, especially because corners that sit on routes, that can go the other way. But a great game plan. You know, Wes, looking deeper at this game, you have to start with the technique of the Pittsburgh secondary. Man, I had no reason to pick against Pittsburgh going into this game. I really did. I was thinking, okay, I understand Ryan Clark's out. Mundy's going to step in. They'll be all right there. You still have Polamalu. You still have corners that can play press, play bump. Because that's what, you know, over the last couple of weeks, Wes, that has been the issue for Denver. You know, look at Kansas City. Play bump man. You know, play bump man on third and long.
Mm-hmm.
Challenge these receivers. Tell Tebow, hey, if you want to throw the slant route, you want to throw a three-step game, our guy's going to be all over you. But they struggled so much with their technique. And one play in the red zone when Tebow threw the deep ball on top of William Gay, he did a great job of looking off the safety, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, he really did. I mean, that's just a vertical concept. It's nothing exotic. You're not going to see it in Sean Payton's playbook, Mike Martz's playbook, Mike McCarthy's. It's not an exotic play. When you have a quarterback that plays the proper technique, can take the free safety and hold him in the middle of the field, prevent him from moving outside the numbers to breaking the deep ball, you're going to make plays.
Yeah, and I think the biggest thing with Tebow and the offense as a whole, and you talking about corners that want to play press coverage, be physical, take away the stop route, the comeback, the three-step game, even if Tebow does complete it, it's a tough window. It's still, what, a 6, 7, 8 yard gain. They still have to continue to drive the length of the field. Right. When you open up the pass game and you force defenders that are playing press coverage to turn and run and handle more space, get them on their heels. And if Tebow's only going to complete 10 to 12 passes a game, you'd rather take those shots vertically, put more pressure on the corners to force them to turn and run, as opposed to forcing Tebow to throw into tighter windows in the three-step game or underneath where they can close that field and make even tighter windows underneath. So I like them taking the shots vertically down the field. I think they have to do the same against the Patriots next week, especially mm-hmm. with that secondary. And when you can be consistent, throwing the nine route, working the option read or the zone read inside, yeah, that's a pretty nasty 1-2 punch. You get a couple screens outside, make your receivers make a couple plays. That's enough to manufacture big plays in the pass game. The biggest question is, can they get enough stops next week?
Well, yeah, I mean, and that's going to be the talk about this matchup, too, is the tight end position for the Patriots, Gronkowski and Hernandez, against a rookie like Quentin Carter out of Oklahoma. You know, we saw Carter at the Senior Bowl last year.
Mm-hmm.
That's a tough spot to be in. You know, I still call second day pick guys after the third round. To be a second day pick and be on a playoff stage and be asked to play man coverage against Rob Gronkowski, especially on third downs or in the red zone, that's where Brady's going to go to work. That's what he did the last time they met. And we've seen consistently from New England the last couple weeks that when it comes to the second half, Tom Brady takes over these football games. Now, he completely takes over these games. Provides field position for his defense, doesn't turn the ball over, takes calculated shots down the field, and starts increasing the tempo of the offense. That's the thing with the Patriots. They don't allow you to switch personnel. Mm-hmm. They stay on the field, and they have guys that can line in multiple positions. They just work the ball down the field and eventually step on your throats and get out of town with the win.
And those offensive tackles in New England, a lot better than what the Steelers had this week.
Yeah. Oh, they are. Yeah. And I'll give some credit to Big Ben in the second half. I don't know what he took at halftime. I don't know how many pain shots he took. But, I mean, he played great football in the second half. Yeah. He finally started stepping up in the pocket. That throw to Cotchery that basically sent the game to OT was classic Big Ben. You know, extend the play. Receiver converts the route all the way across the field. He throws basically – you know, puts it right in the money, throws a dime out there for the guy to make the play. Yeah. And I will say, Big Ben played great in the second half. But the first half, that one turnover that Carter made the interception on, Wes, which is cover one Robin. You know, they show cover two from the pre-snap alignment. Carter works down in the hole, which is between the hash marks. You read the quarterback. Big Ben makes a bad throw. Can't step on that ankle. Can't step into his throw. Carter's right there for the pick.
Yeah, it was a big play. At that point, and you brought up Carter, and we saw him at the Senior Bowl. This is a big physical guy, a bit linear, though. And that's why I think the Broncos who drafted Raheem Moore in the second round are going to miss him. More of a cover guy that can get in and out of his breaks. Carter, downhill, linear, can run, he can make plays, he can be a physical presence. Versus Gronkowski, who's comfortable in play and inside a phone booth, using a defender's momentum against him, getting enough room, and then going to get the football. And Hernandez, I think, is an even worse matchup for him. It's going to be a lot of pressure on the rookie. There's no doubt about that.
No, it is. It's going to be a great matchup to watch, though.
Yeah.
Let's move on here to tonight's game, Wes. You got Bama, LSU. It's the best two teams in the country. I don't care what anyone says. After watching these BCS games, you know, the last week, no. These are the top two teams in the country. And they're loaded with NFL talent. Loaded. Especially in the secondary. Let's start there, Wes. Give me two players to watch in the secondary.
Well, you have to watch the two standout corners. And Morris Claiborne, this is a guy, he's right under 6 foot with great footwork, natural change of direction skills, fluidity. So he plays like a smaller corner, Bowen. But at 6 foot, he's got these really long arms, which allows him to play physical off the line. He's not intimidated by anyone. So upper body, he's able to play like a bigger corner and press consistently, fluid to turn and run. Just tracks the football as well as anyone. He had that big pick last time against Alabama. I think he's the top pure cover man in the entire country. And at his size, 6 foot, I think he's a lock for the top 10. Dre Kirkpatrick, the bigger corner on the other side of the ball on Alabama, a 6'2", 195-pound kid. If there's a corner that tackles better in the NCAA, I've yet to see him. I think he's more of a zone guy. He can press, but he lacks ideal quickness like most 6'2 guys. But he can be physical. He's patient, does a nice job funneling receivers to the outside, getting his head around. But when he's asked to play in zone, he's got a great feel. For a bigger guy, he keeps his balance well, changes directions. He can go get the football, and he'll really tackle. I think he'll be a big presence, helping out on the edge against the LSU run game tonight. I can see him going anywhere from, I'd say, pick 6 all the way to 12, somewhere in that area.
Yeah, and you bring up a great point. And for the listeners out there, when you watch secondary players, especially at the college level, watch their ability to tackle. Okay, that's become a lost art in college and the pros because these GMs want playmakers. They'll figure, okay, we'll coach him up. We'll get him to tackle. It doesn't work that way. They want guys that force turnovers. Turnovers create wins, create money in everyone's wallet at the end of the season. But going back to their first matchup, you know, LSU and Bama, I was so impressed with, one, the run-pass reach from the safeties and the corners. They don't take false steps. They have their eyes in the right place. You talk about eyes. You go back, hey, Wes, Saturday afternoon, Pac-Man Jones versus Andre Johnson.
Oh, man.
I mean, that's the worst technique I've seen from a pro DB in a while. You're playing off coverage versus an out and up, and you stick your eyes in the backfield. I mean, I had a DB coach who put it the best. Whenever you look in the backfield, he'd stop the film, turn on the lights, and go, hey, man, I don't know why he didn't throw it to you. You're wide open. That's the best way to think about it. The quarterback's not throwing the ball to you as the DB. Put your eyes in the receipt. But you'll see that tonight. These DBs from Bama and LSU are so well coached, so well trained with their eyes. And that's the first key as a defensive back to having success, to producing on a big stage, is know what you're seeing. Know what a high hat read is. That's a pass. Know what a low hat read is. That's a run. Know what gap you feel on run support. Understand your leverage. Understand where your help is. If it's blitz man, if it's cover zero, understand to use you got to use the sideline as your free safety help. It's cover one, use the free safety in the middle of the field. Funnel that receiver to your help. There's a lot of good things you can get tonight and start understanding the technique of the game because these DBs are so talented.
Yeah, without a doubt. And that's why so many of these 4- and 5-star guys want to go to Bama, want to go to LSU. Because, too, also, Bowen, you see a lot of time with these, you watch Penn State, they're primarily in cover two. Watch teams like LSU, they mix it up. They want to play press man. They want to play off man. They want to play zone coverage. And I think you get that whole, a well-rounded corner. Granted, Drake Kirkpatrick at 6'2", is this a guy you want having playing off man? Absolutely not. But he can play up near the line and reroute at the same time, cover two concepts. Feels routes so well in front of him, clicks and closes and tackles well, and it is a lost art. There's not too many defenders as a whole, not only corners, but defenders don't tackle well in the NCAA. So when you can find a corner at 6'2", 195, that can press, play zone, and tackle, those guys tend to go high on draft day.
I agree. Now tell us about Trent Richardson. I think everyone looks at Richardson and they think Mark Ingram. How do you compare him to Ingram?
Well, I thought last year when I watched him, I thought Ingram was a little more natural, feeling his way through tight areas, but Richardson was far and away the superior athlete, the more physical imposing back. This year, and you don't see this often with backs, I think Richardson's been much more comfortable picking his way through traffic, allowing his blocks to set up, and then accelerating, and then using that physical force that he has, not just to run over people, but to set up blocks, make a man miss, and then break tackles. And he does have good speed. I wouldn't be shocked at all if he's, you know, 6 foot, 225, and runs in the high 4.4 range. But much like Larry Johnson, this is a guy that breaks tackles at the first level, accelerates quickly, and that's how he creates a bunch of big plays. Plus, he'll catch the football out of the backfield. He's more dynamic in the open field than people think. And honestly, when I watch him, this is a stopwatch position running back. He's going to run extremely well for his size, and I think he's the best running back prospect we've seen since Adrian Peterson.
Wow, that's a big statement now, Wes.
Yeah. Well, you look at the guys that have come out, the Mendenhalls, the McFaddens, mm-hmm. the Chris Johnsons, you know, they're all very talented backs, but this is a guy, I think he can play three downs, and you can ride this guy like a rented mule. 5 to 7 years, 250 carries per year. I think he's going to be on the plus side of 4 yards per carry, 4.5, 4.6, and you're going to get a 12, 13, 1400 back, you know, without batting an eye from this guy.
That'd be interesting to watch. You know, one thing, Wes, I wanted to ask you about as a quarterback play. I don't think quarterback play is very good in the SEC. I don't think it's been good for a while. But is there something we should watch tonight with these QBs from a draft perspective? You know, is there something there? Is there a draftable player at quarterback tonight?
Well, I think if there's one, you know, A.J. McCarron, maybe down the line. He's only a junior this year. We got to see how this guy develops. We would have never said Greg McElroy was a draftable guy watching him as a junior. But Jordan Jefferson, this is a former 5-star kid who's had a lot of trouble off the field, was suspended early in the year, but he's 6'5", he's 225, he can run well, he can spin the football. All the tools are there for this guy to be an NFL quarterback. Now, he's going to take a lot of development. We're going to see him a lot running the option, which is what Bama struggled with, I believe, earlier in the year. But this guy can make all the throws. You know, does he see coverage as well? Does he decipher information? Does he understand his own offense when finding secondary reads? You know, this isn't Andrew Luck. This isn't Robert Griffin. But when you get a 5-star guy that can run, he's 6'5", he makes all the throws with that much talent, you know, you'd be hard-pressed to find there's a lot of worse options out there that you could take late in the draft than this guy because his upside is very high.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned Griffin. I know we're a long way out. We've still got to go through the combine, through pro day workouts for both Luck and Griffin. But in your last mock draft, you had him going 4 to Cleveland, if I'm correct.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
I think just there'll be a lot of teams fighting for this guy. I don't know how good he's going to be. I don't know how good he's going to be as a rookie. But you look at the top 10, you look at teams that are desperate for a quarterback outside the top 10. You take a team like Seattle. I mean, you start looking at Miami, Washington, Cleveland, and so many teams are desperate for a QB in the NFL. We've seen in the playoffs, you got to have one to win. You have to. Yeah. I think there could be a race for this guy. I think you're going to see some wheel and deal, teams trying to trade up, trying to get him. Because after that, Barkley's not coming out. Landry Jones struggled versus my Hawkeyes in the inside bowl. He's not coming out. I know you like Tannehill out of A&M. But after that, who do you got? Nick Foles from Arizona?
Yeah, Nick Foles is a talented guy. I mean, this forced a guy like Brock Osweiler from Arizona State, the 6'8" guy, to come out and roll the dice. You know, and this, he reminds me a lot of John Skelton when he came out, and he thinks he's going to be one of the top prospects in the draft, and I wouldn't be shocked at all based on upside if he goes in that third, fourth round range. And another thing that's unique about this year's draft, with the lower cap and money that has to be invested in these top-end guys, you have St. Louis at 2, you have Minnesota at 3. In years past, teams would never want to go to the second or third pick to invest in a quarterback, not knowing what they're going to potentially get. Now, with less money invested in a guy like Robert Griffin, and with St. Louis having Sam Bradford, with Christian Ponder being drafted last year to Minnesota, I think those teams are in an ideal situation, especially St. Louis, to have a huge bidding war with, like you said, the Washington Redskins, the Dolphins, the Seahawks, the Browns, to potentially go up to that number two spot and get a guy like Robert Griffin III, who, in a lot of those schemes, especially Shanahan and his boot action, and then in Cleveland, where Mike Holmgren, this guy's loved Seneca Wallace forever. You got to think he would be in love with Robert Griffin III as well. Good fits for both those offenses. A lot of upside to his game. A hard worker, more quarterback than athlete. I think he's a real talented guy that could end up going number two overall when it's all said and done.
Right, and you bring up Shanahan. I mean, the Washington Redskins need a quarterback so badly. You know, in this offseason, Mike Shanahan tried to sell Quanah Beck and Grossman. Come on now.
Yeah,
beat it. That's not the answer. Those are number two quarterbacks. Those are backups that can come in if you have an injury. You need a signal caller in Washington if you want to compete with Eli and the Giants, Romo and the Cowboys, and Vic and the Eagles. That's going to be very interesting. I know it's a long way off. I just wanted to pick your brain on that real quick.
The other thing I want to throw to you, Bowen, quick. You have a first-round pick that you have to invest in a quarterback. Matt Flynn's made himself a ton of money these last couple weeks. Do you invest your first-round pick in a guy like Robert Griffin III, or do you invest it in a guy like Matt Flynn?
I think it all depends on where you're positioned in the draft. If you have no chance of moving up and you know you're not going to get Griffin, I think Flynn's the next pick's best option. He's got game experience. He's worked under Mike McCarthy. He's worked under Joe Philbin in Green Bay. He comes from a good organization that develops talent. You're getting a game-ready prospect with Flynn. With Griffin, you're definitely getting more upside. There's no doubt about it, especially the way NFL offenses have transitioned to the college spread. We see that every Sunday now. You look at Cam Newton in Carolina. Look at Tebow. I mean, heck, they don't have that read option. But you look at Green Bay and New Orleans, they run the spread offense too now.
Yeah.
So Robert Griffin, for me personally, is I'm saying, okay, we can get a lot more creative with Robert Griffin than Matt Flynn. But if I need to win now, and if I'm Mike Shanahan, I might go get, and I don't have an opportunity to get RG3, I might look at Flynn and say to Mr. Schneider, the owner out there, we need to give the money and the draft picks for him because we need to start winning football games.
Yeah, that's a tough debate overall. If you can't get Griffin III.
Yeah. It all depends on where you are as an organization. Do you have the talent to make a playoff run now? Yeah. A team like Cleveland, I don't know if they do. I don't think so, not on offense, not the wide receiver position. Yeah. I like what they've done defensively through the draft, and I'm a big believer in Dick Geron, the DC, who was my former head coach in Buffalo. But there, yeah, Robert Griffin III works out better for me because I'm thinking long term. I think I could develop this guy along with developing the rest of my offense around one player. It might not happen next year, but I'm figuring in 2 years I should be able to get the right personnel to go out and compete with Baltimore and Pittsburgh and Cincinnati, who's now a young team on Sundays.
Yeah, and not a lot of teams, though, have those Green Bay Packer weapons that Flynn was able to throw to. That's another tough thing. Is this offense, or is this Matt Flynn? You know, we like Kevin Cobb a lot, too, some people coming into the year, and he struggled as well. So.
No, that's a great point. But also with Cobb, you'll see the desperation fact come into play. Is that Arizona had to give up everything to get him because they needed someone. And during the season – NFL season is like a daily narrative. You never know what's going to happen. By the end of the season, John Skelton's a starter and won 5 or 6 games. I don't know the exact number with the Cardinals. So he's set up to make some money in the future as well. All right, Wes, real quick before we get out of here, who do you like tonight?
I like Bama. I'm thinking, 13-6, something like that.
I'm taking LSU.
Are you?
I'm taking Les Miles. I think the quarterback play is slightly better. It's not that much better than Bama. I think they get some big plays offensively against that tied defense. I'm not going to predict a score. I'm terrible at that. I think Alabama takes home the trophy tonight. I mean, LSU takes home the trophy tonight.
Nick Saban with 3 weeks to prepare. I like that a little more than Les Miles.
All right, we'll see what happens.
Wes is taking Bama. I'm taking LSU tonight in the BCS matchup. We'll see how that plays out. We'll be back throughout the playoffs, breaking down X's and O's, matchups, personnel, et cetera, and start making our way towards the NFL draft because we will be down in Mobile at the Senior Bowl. Wes will be at the East-West game. We'll all be at the Combine to bring you daily breakdowns of the top prospects in the NFL. We'll catch you soon.